Okay, so a long while ago, I had some chest pains. They took me to the hospital, ran some tests. I'm laying in one of those hospital beds, scared, surrounded by the pinkish plastic curtain, and the doctors, on the other side of this thin, crinkly sheet, they start talking about me. Oh my God, I don't know. I've never seen anything like it. What do you think?
Well, I think the same thing you do. It's gotta be the bacterial meningitis.
Poor kid. He had his whole life in front of him. And then naturally, I start screaming at the top of my lungs, and now they want to sedate me because I'm agitated. Yes, I'm agitated. Your stupid doctors keep talking about me in the past tense. I'm right here. Well, I didn't have bacterial meningitis. Actually, no one had any idea what I had, but eventually, they said I was free to go. And walking out, I was angry. Righteous indignation. How dare they? Angry. Until I looked around and realized that most people in those other rooms, they weren't going anywhere for a while. Today on Snap Judgment, the patient. Amazing stories from real people under the microscope. My name is Glenn Washington. Please eat your fruits and vegetables because you're listening. Listening to Snap Judgment. After that open, you might not know it, but love is in the air. That's why we're kicking off today's The Patient episode, the first date story. Mouthwash, check. Cologne, check. Lorraine Berry tells us her story.
Back in 06, before you could swipe left and right, there was the salon personals hot list.
He had dark black hair and sort of an olive complexion. Somebody had taken a picture of him when he was sitting on the floor, leaning up against his couch, and he had a cup of coffee to his mouth. He was drinking from it. And there was something about him drinking coffee that just filled me with this idea of, you know, that he looked like Sunday morning. And Sunday morning for me is kind of sexy. His name was Yves. It was spelled Y-V-E-S, traditional French spelling. We were both 42. And he also mentioned that he was looking for a mermaid. And, he had two daughters, and he was raising them to be riot girls, which was exactly what I was raising my daughters to be. It made me feel something warm toward him. I'd been online dating for about 3 years, and in that time, I had been on my share of disastrous dates, I think would be a good word for it. So when I looked at Eve's profile, and especially in those first emails we were exchanging, I kept waiting for him to reveal himself as someone who just wasn't as good as he appeared to be.
So after the hot list, Lorraine and Eve started going through the rounds of online dating. You know, from the messages to the really long messages. Then they hopped on the phone and talked way past their bedtimes, until finally, they decided to meet for the first time for a weekend date in Montreal.
I didn't have the money to pay for a hotel, and there was no way that I was going to drive 5 hours to Montreal and then turn around and drive home after a date. It just wasn't going to happen. And so he said, you know, when you get up here, you can sleep in my daughter's room. His daughter, who he shared custody with, stayed in that room from time to time. And, you know, let's just plan on I'll be your tour guide for Montreal. I just found it so easy to talk to him when I was on the phone with him that I even confessed things like, you know, there is this secret fear that you're going to take one look at me and I'm not going to be what you want. And he just kept saying things back to me that we were going to be two friends meeting for the weekend and that was where we were going to start. So I pull up, I park on the street across from his building, and there he was. He looks like what I'm expecting. One thing I did notice that I hadn't seen in his profile is his teeth were crooked. I noticed it, and then I didn't notice it anymore.
Eve walked over and gave her a nice warm hug. He smelled like tobacco, and she didn't mind. Then he carried her stuff to his apartment, showed Lorraine her bedroom, and offered her a drink.
And I said, okay, but just a minute, I have to check the refrigerator. I'll explain in a minute. And so I opened the fridge, and there was nothing in there, at which point I dialed my friend Angela. Said something like, well, hi, Angela. I just want to let you know I'm here in Montreal and I'm at Eve's apartment and I've opened the fridge and there are no severed heads in here. So I'm going to assume that he's not an axe murderer and that I'm going to be okay this weekend. And Eve kind of laughed and then he said, yes, Lorraine, but you didn't open the freezer. And I started laughing and he started laughing and, you know, this is going fantastic.
Eve excitedly shared his weekend plans with Lorraine, and that for now, he wanted to start by going grocery shopping together to make her a nice dinner.
I thought, okay, that's great, that's great. So I said, okay, I need to go into the bathroom, and I went into the bathroom, and I came out, and he was just standing in the middle of the living room. He reached out his hand, and he grabbed my arm, and he pulled me toward him, and he began to kiss me. And I began to kiss him back, and we just didn't stop. I said, do you think we're going too fast? And he said, yes, but I don't want to stop. Neither do I. I think it was the first time he said, I feel like I've won the lottery. How has this happened? He must have said it a half dozen times. And I knew what he was talking about. I realized that I was with a lover. Probably sometime after 4:30, my stomach began to rumble and I realized how hungry I was. And so Eve and I were walking toward the market. Eve suddenly turned to me and he said, you know what? I think we need to skip the market. My head's hurting and I'm really hungry. Let's just go to this restaurant and we'll go there. And so we turned the corner and all of a sudden Eve said, there's my daughter. I saw this attractive woman and she was pushing a little girl in a stroller. Eve stopped and the little girl threw herself into Eve's arms and she said, Papa. At one point, he stood up and he said, Lorraine, this is my ex-wife, Helen. And I said hello, and she said hello. And we said our goodbyes, and we continued down the road. And he turned to me and he said, oh, that has just made this day even more perfect. My daughter is everything to me. And once again, I was just like, yeah, I know how that feels. So we continued on to the restaurant, and I don't even remember what the food was, because all I remember is I kept staring at him, and he kept staring at me, and we were holding hands across the table.
After dinner, Eve and Lorraine slowly strolled back to his apartment, still hand in hand, of course.
We climbed back up into the apartment. He said, yeah, my head's really bothering me. Oh, Lorraine, I hate to do this, he said, but would it be okay if I just lay down here for a little while and maybe snoozed for a couple of hours and then we can get back to being together? I knew that headaches could be distracting, and so I said, of course. After a few minutes, Eve drifted off to sleep. Shortly thereafter, I fell asleep too. I had been asleep maybe about an hour, and then I heard this loud bang. I got up out of bed and I went into the bathroom, and what I saw was frightening. In front of me, the tap was running full blast. There were Tylenol scattered all over the bathroom floor, and Eve was sitting on the floor against the wall, and he started to stand up, and then he fell over, and I shook him. And there was no response. I was scared. I had a bad feeling about what was happening.
Lorraine immediately dialed 911 and requested an ambulance. When they take him away, he's no longer just unconscious.
Now, his legs won't stop shaking. His whole body is shaking. His eyelids are fluttering.
When they get to the hospital, they start wheeling Eve away.
I was upset. I could see him through the glass, and there was nothing I could do at that moment.
The nurses told Lorraine that she should just go back home, well, his home, and wait.
It was the strangest thing to go back into that apartment knowing that Eve was at the hospital and that there was nothing I could do. And I remember that I lay back down in the bed and I buried my head in his pillow. I kept playing the scene in the bathroom over and over and over again. I found myself feeling guilty, thinking that this was my fault. I would drift off for a few minutes of sleep. And this time the phone wakes me up and it's now almost 2:30 in the morning. And there is a woman on the other line and she says, "Hello, is this the woman who brought in Eve?" And I said, "Yes, it is. This is Lorraine." And she said, do you know of any relatives that we can contact?" And I thought, oh my God, I don't know who his mother and father is. And it suddenly occurred to me that I had met his ex-wife, Helen.
Lorraine grabbed Eve's cell phone and gave Helen's number to the woman on the line.
I stopped her before she could get off the phone and I said, "Is Eve dying?" And she paused and she said, "Well, I can't really answer that, but it doesn't look good." I said, "Okay." And then I said, "Thank you." And then I hung up the phone and I thought, I've just thanked her for giving me this terrible news. Why did I thank her?
Once again, Lorraine drifted asleep. Then another call wakes her up at about 7 a.m.
It was Helen, and she said, "We were wondering if you could come down to the hospital." And I said, "Well, what's going on?" And she said, "Well, Eve's on a respirator, and we're gathering his friends. We're going to turn the respirator off later this morning, but we would like his friends to have a chance to come in and say goodbye to him. And we were hoping that you would want to come in and do that." And I said, "Yes, of course. I'll be there as soon as I can." As I came down the hallway, I felt them all turn to look at me. I felt as if this was his family's moment and I would be an intruder. The person I was most afraid of was Eve's mother. I was scared that she was going to yell at me that I had killed her son. Even before I can get through the curtain, Helen and this other tall guy, Guy, Eve's best friend, came out to me and Helen said, "We wanted to ask you a question." And I said, "Yes." And she said, "Well, we noticed that Eve, he apparently came into the emergency room naked. There's no clothes or anything." And I said, "Yeah, that's right. We were asleep when it happened. He was naked in the bed." And I remember that she threw her arms around me and hugged me. And she just seemed so happy about that he had been, you know, that we had been in bed together. I was like, well, this is a strange reaction. But at the same time, I was like, wow, yeah, he wasn't alone. He was with me and we, you know, we had been happy. So then they took me over to the bed. Eve was in the bed, of course. And on the other side of the bed, there was this white-haired man, a dark-haired woman. They were obviously Eve's mom and dad, and they looked absolutely gutted. His father explained to me that Eve had had a massive brain bleed and that the doctors had decided not to operate on him because even if they did the surgery, he would be brain dead. All of a sudden, I burst into tears. And I kept saying, "I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. There wasn't something that I could do." And I'm crying. And somebody put their arms around me and said, "No, no, no, no. We are so glad that you were there. Do you realize that he's been alone in that apartment for the last 2 years? And that if you hadn't been there, he would have died alone in that apartment? We are so glad that you were there." And then his mother said this incredibly generous thing to me. She said, "Would you like to have some time alone with Eve?" "Yes, please." And they all left and went out into the hallway. I came to stand by the bed. His mouth was completely covered with scrub green, medical green plug. And his arms, there were so many different IVs and tubes running in and out of his arms. He was laying there and he was sleeping. And I kept looking at him and I was like, but his color is perfect and he's breathing. How can he be dying? What do you say in a moment like this? What words are you supposed to speak when you know it's the last time you're going to get to talk to somebody? I said, I just want you to know that your family is here and that your daughter is going to be looked after. People are going to take care of her. She's going to be okay. I just want you to know how grateful I am to you. I feel so thankful that I got to spend this time with you. I'm going to miss you so much. The possibility for us. And then I wanted to kiss him, and everywhere I looked, there were tubes. The only thing I could see that didn't have a needle or an IV coming out of it was his hand, and I bent over and I kissed his hand. I have to go now. And then I said, I love you. And then I walked out into the hallway.
Lorraine thanked Eve's family and friends, and then she left the hospital. She got into her car and started the long drive home back to New York. After crossing the border, she stopped at a small diner off the side of the road. This would be her first meal since her dinner with Eve.
Sort of staring at the menu, and this waitress came over, and she was probably 20 years older than me, and she poured me a cup of coffee and some cream, and she wandered away, and I remember that I just kept sitting there, and I hadn't ordered anything, and she came back over, and I felt like I owed her an explanation. So I said to her, listen, I'm really sorry. I was with my lover in Montreal, and I found myself referring to Eve as my boyfriend. I'd only been in this person's physical presence a total of 7 hours before he died. What right did I have to grieve? I looked at her face, and this look flashed across her face, and I thought, oh God, Lorraine, nobody cares. She said, I'm so sorry, but the same thing happened to me. And she walked away from me. I felt so bad that I had brought that pain back to her. And she came back about maybe a minute later, and she said, a few years ago, my husband and I were on vacation, and we were in our hotel the first night, and he had a brain aneurysm, and he died. Oh, my God. She poured me some coffee, and she just said, I know what you're going through. And, you know, she stood there for a second, and then she walked back to behind the counter because there were other people in the restaurant.
Stay strong, Lorraine, and thank you so much for sharing your story with The Snap. Lorraine Berry's nonfiction has appeared in The Guardian, Lit Hub, Talking Writing, and other places. We'll have a link to her work and website, ambersands.net, on snapjudgment.org. The original sound design for Lorraine's story was by Renzel Gorio. It was produced by Davey Kim. This is a show about story. So let me tell you the real story. Public media is fragile. So fragile, especially now. And if you don't make it happen, this doesn't happen. And this is in you. We can't wait for someone else to support this community-based institution that you depend upon. This station that each and every day gives it to you like it is. It's special only if you make it special. So support it. What is that number to dial? Someone please tell this good soul listening right now who knows their station needs them, their station, please tell them the number to dial.